If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for Closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the light and love of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena. You're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening our topic is Divine Encounters with the Masters. Let's begin with a spiritual integration. And tonight we're going to be doing a topside down delineation of your line of descension from the very heart of God and through the lineages that we, as a family of light, come through in coming to Earth as a consciousness ray to fulfill our mission. So take a deep breath. And call yourself forward into the very awareness of your presence in the imperishable star realms. See yourself as consciousness rays of light extending down, as it were, from the imperishable star realms, the divine throne realms of the Absolute, the great central sun systems, the office of the Christ, the order of Melchizedek, the legions of angels, the Chohans of the seven rays, and as a soul, you're picking up your sheaths of consciousness, your garments, your etheric body, your mental body, your causal body, your astral body, and down into the physical electromagnetic field, another density that you call a physical body, which is now resonating third, fourth, and fifth density frequencies, and transitioning all of them into the new Earth in the fifth dimension. So, beloved, follow the purple light when it appears, because that's the spiritual traveler coming to accompany you upon your inner journeys of expanding awareness. And that purple light assures a perfect provision and protection. And know that the Master is always present, although very seldom visible and very seldom speaking to you, because the Master wants to make you a master and not have you follow another. So we're going to be looking tonight at divine encounters with the Masters. Because we've had a greater collective influx of light that's impacting the entire Earth and everyone on it, the infusion is also merging the dimensions so that we're having more and more things that before were invisible to us becoming visible within our visual electromagnetic spectrum of seership. We see only a small fraction of the within the electromagnetic realm anyway. But with the merging of the dimensions, the things that were formerly in the astral plane and invisible to us are suddenly appearing in. That's why you're seeing many apparitions and globes of light and interdimensional beings and so forth. But along with that, you're going to have more and more encounters with the earthly and terrestrial, that is to say the terrestrial and the celestial masters of light. Every day, angels and masters, both men and women, walk amongst us within the physical world. You very seldom would recognize them as a master, unless they have direct dealings with you, because they walk unobtrusively through life. They never want, again, people to be disempowered or entrained into them and their parade. They want you to march at the head of your own parade. But because we have this constant brushing elbows, as it were, with master souls, it's time to not allow the things of the world to overly occupy your consciousness to where you lose the awareness of the miracles that are all around you. There are so many miraculous encounters that if you don't pay attention, or if you're not staying present in the moment, you're likely to miss them. First of all, to basically define what our topic is tonight, I'll just go over a few definitions. What is an angel? An angel is a messenger. That's what the word angelo means in Greek. Angel is a messenger sent from God. Basically, an angel is a devic being who has attained mastery, or is in process of attaining mastery. And an archangel is the equivalent of what we would call a master in the human kingdom. So it is a being that is a ministering spirit sent to guard, guide, protect, and to fulfill the prayer requests of the heirs of salvation. That's what the men and women of earth are called when they have come under the salvation of the office of the Christ. So angels are agents of God who fulfill his divine directives. They serve as agents of God's will. So they are not to be worshipped, bowed down to, or any of your, let's say, devotion vested into them. They always defer to the Lord, the Christ. And many times in the Bible, when people would try to bow down to an angel, the angel would forbid them, saying, don't do that. Don't bow to me. Worship God. So it's not appropriate to worship angels. It's not appropriate to worship ascended masters. It's not appropriate to worship space beings or anything but God and His Son. So, you know, it's important to realize the areas of jurisdiction. The angel has come to stand with you in service to you, in service to your divine unfoldment. They stand at the ready to immediately implement your prayer requests, for example. That's their job. They implement, they facilitate, but of themselves they are servants, servant spirits. Angels often assume a form with wings simply because we expect angels to have wings. This was something that was attributed to angels back in the Middle Ages because they could fly. And, of course, Earthman, being very literal, couldn't understand how anything could fly without wings. So there you have wings. But actually, the shafts of light that come up from the between the shoulder blades do resemble wings to a certain extent when you see the light bodies. They definitely are different than human spirits. And sometimes to differentiate themselves from, say, for example, a master, a human master, they will indeed assume a form so that you can tell the difference. So, what is a master? A master is a superhuman, a person who has mastered himself, because no one can make you into a master. You have to master each of your levels of consciousness. And so, in terms of the Earth School, EU, Earth University, a master is a soul that has become perfected in terms of the Earth, not in terms of the cosmos, because there's always another level, but in terms of the Earth. So we're talking about, right now, Earth masters. A person who has attained the fifth level of initiation, known as the resurrection initiation, is technically called a master. So the fifth degree initiate, which is the master, or an adept, that's another name for them, they are residents in the fifth kingdom called the kingdom of God, which is the kingdom of souls. And an initiate who has mastered their physical, astral, causal, mental, and spiritual levels is what we term a master. So there are also masters of, you know, planetary and stellar civilizations, and I'm not going to specifically look at them tonight because we want to move into the experiencing of our own mastery levels, and also I want to share a couple stories from my own encounters with masters. So even masters who have come, say, for example, from other planetary civilizations, usually they will come in as visitors to Earth, but also they want to master this most difficult of all planetary curriculum, which is the school of difficult endeavor, which is Earth. Now, avatars are different. They are souls that embody a divine quality of consciousness or a specific they are sometimes a specific manifestation or embodiment of a deity, a god or a goddess. And they come, can come from any dimension or level, and do not have to be masters in terms of what we would consider masters. Again, they come from a higher level to embody a particular divine potency. Avatars embody as usually as aspects of Lord Vishnu, which is the second person in the Hindu Trinity, which represents preservation. And the avatar is also called by different names in other world traditions, such as Bodhisattva, Chinrizi, Avalokiteshvara. They have different names. Then you have the travelers, the traveler lineage, which is a lineage that is always anchored by at least one person on the physical plane, and sometimes by more than one. So the silent ones are agents, even higher agents, very mysterious ones, that's why they're called the silent ones, and they're agents, direct agents of the eternal absolute, which is called Sarmad or Sukmad or Paramakshar, depending on your spiritual tradition. So those of you who are familiar with my particular master teacher, John Roger, who works with many of you, and he's a traveler, and also John Morton, his successor. They are travelers living on the earth today. And there's Harold Klemp and of Ekankar, and it's a lineage. It works as a lineage. So any and all of these can appear at any time or place and basically assume any kind of appearance as may be required. The masters always observe a great economy in how they expend their energy. So they never do things that are not necessary to be done. They don't say words unless it's necessary that they be said. So if it's not necessary for them to take a physical appearance, or if it would in any way disempower you or frighten you, they won't. But I can tell you from my own personal experience and many, 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 many contacts I've had physically with the masters that they're always there when you're up against a rock in a hard place and you need supernatural intervention. They will appear in some form to help you. You can count on that. They always will. So the lords of the seven rays are sixth-level initiates called Chohans. Chohan literally means lord. And the Chohans of the rays are the masters that you normally think of when you talk about your ascended masters. That would be the masters of Moria and Kutumi and Hilarion and Seraphis Bay and so forth and so on, that you're familiar with, Saint Germain and those. Now, the earth itself has produced only one Christ, which means has actually produced a soul that has evolved and attained Christship on the earth. And that's an earth master that has attained Christhood. And we're the only non-sacred planet to ever produce a Christ. And a non-sacred planet is a planet that has not yet undergone the third degree of initiation, which is when you're completely infused with your soul principle. And the Earth is a second degree initiate, so she's still got attitude and ego. So the Christ that Earth has produced is a master by the name of Lord Maitreya. And he is the Earth Christ. In other words, the Earth anointed one. So if you're interested in more information on initiations and the masters per se, the best book I can think of is by the Tibetan master, Dwal Khul, or DK, through his scribe, Alice Bailey, and it's called Rays and Initiations. And the best book about the angelic and David kingdoms that I've found is by Flower Newhouse. And she's written many books, but the one that comes to mind is Natives of Eternity. So Jesus is not an avatar, nor an earth master, but the actual Son aspect, or Son of God, the Word of God incarnate. Jesus was very, very different from the masters and the avatars and so forth that we normally think of. And both he and his mother, Mary, or Miriam, were most recently from Venus, which was like a stepping down point, let's say, to this earth mission. So Jesus is not of this earth, and so he's not the same as Lord Maitreya. He's different. Jesus embodied the basic initiatory way that all humankind is designed to walk. His life was both historical, in terms of it being factual, and at the same time, everything that happened in his life was a visual, symbolic enactment of the seven levels of initiation that all must pass through. Earth humanity must pass through at least five initiations to qualify for mastery. And many in the human world today, the human kingdom, are indeed preparing for initiation and undergoing initiation as we speak. So this isn't something far off into the future. So what initiation specifically means is the transmutation from the density of the lower consciousness into light quotient. So the very first level of initiation is the perfectioning of the physical body, which produces 25% light. And symbolically in the life of Jesus, it's represented by the spiritual birth, or the birth in Bethlehem, which means the house of bread, the body is the house of bread, and the spiritual rebirth of the soul consciousness, the soul awakening, takes place in a virgin, symbolized by Mary, within the purified and prepared personality. In other words, you have to have come to a measure of preparedness for that spiritual rebirth of soul to occur in a person, and that's called the first degree of initiation. Many, many people in the human kingdom are now at present first degree initiates. That's why there's so many people that are working out and exercising and mastering their physical body and doing excellent things in a physical, athletic way, and also turning to vegetarianism. These are all signs of that purifying and perfectioning of the physical vehicle. The second initiation, which represents 50% light quotient, is baptism in the River Jordan. The River Jordan signifies the river of the divine current of life, the sound current, or the flow of the higher life. and the entering into a conscious spiritual life, which was signified by Jesus being baptized in the River Jordan by John the Baptist. And that represents the second degree of initiation. During that degree of initiation, you go through all the temptations of mastering your astral body. It's a very difficult initiation to complete because you have to master your emotional and your imaginative nature and overcome the Maya and the glamours and the attachments and all the things that bind us to return here in this lower world. The third degree of initiation is total soul infusion, when the soul completely is integrated and homogenized, as it were, into your emotions, into your physical body, and into your mental body. And that's 75% pure light in yourself. I'm talking about yourselves, cells of your body. So the purified soul becomes a third degree initiate, which is the first time it has direct contact with what's called the monad, or the soul, the spiritual principle, the pure spiritual absolute. And it's often referred to as sainthood. A person just glows when they're in that process of transfiguration, like Jesus did on the Mount of Transfiguration. He glowed like the sun. The fourth degree of initiation, you're 100% pure, 100% light in your cells, in your subatomic particles. And you go through what's called the crucifixion initiation, which is usually an extremely painful incarnational pattern because you have to overcome the world, the flesh, and the devil. And that means you overcome the human, the social, the psychic, and the body consciousness, representing the world and the flesh. And the devil is your ego. So these things must be mastered and transcended. And the soul at that point even is transcended. The soul is relinquished at that point as an energy point of identity, and it is absorbed up into your spirit or your monad at that point. So it's a very, very intense lifetime, usually one in which you lose everything. It's great suffering in that particular incarnation. The fifth degree of initiation is the resurrection. And this would be what we would call mastery, when you actually surmount death itself. You transcend beyond mortality and you become immortal. Now, many masters choose not to immortalize their bodies. Sometimes they die even after they've gone through this initiation. It's an option. You know, some masters immortalize their bodies and some don't. It just depends on what they want to do. You know, you have free roaming range at that point. The ascension is a complete release from the ring pass knot of the earth and the solar system. You have become a Lord, a Christ conscious, a Christed Lord. And, we'll progress on because I want to get to the stories. Anyway, the seventh degree of initiation, we have only one on the earth, and that's the Lord Maitreya. I'm talking about the earth, not talking about Jesus at this point. I'm talking about the principle, and the principle on earth is anchored through Lord Maitreya, and that's divine sonship. Now, light workers that are going through this process of initiation form what's called a collective messiah. And in their collectivity, they represent those who are in process of awakening fully and integrating fully their soul principle. So they form the body of Christ, or the church of Christ. And the Greek word for church simply means the gathering of consciousness, let's say. It's not a building. It's not a religion. Mankind created that. But the Christ is not, again, a religion. Christ is a principle of unconditional divine love. So the best book that I have found I can recommend to you actually there's three, are all by Alice Bailey herself, without the Tibetan Master. These were books that she authored. From Bethlehem to Calvary goes through the 5 degrees of initiation, which is very good. And then she wrote two others, Consciousness of the Atom and Initiation, Human and Solar. So for those of you who are scholars and want some very factual, excellent information, there you go. So let me ask you, have you ever had a divine encounter with a person who impacted you in such a way that you could never, ever forget it? You know, when you have one of these encounters, it shifts you inside and you never forget it. Maybe it was just a smile. Maybe there were eyes that just looked at you, caught your gaze, and penetrated you to the very depths of your soul. You know, it doesn't have to be a very lengthy encounter. It could just be a glance. But you're changed forever. And did they just seem to suddenly be there 1 minute and just as suddenly disappear? Think back. Or think forward. Or pay attention now. Because after you hear these shows, you know, you're going to have an encounter if you haven't already had one, or you're going to remember one you had. So what struck you as most significant? Their eyes? Their words? Their overall presence? And know this, that any divine encounter is real, whether it takes place in your sleep state, while you're asleep and dreaming, or you're having night visions, which is a very real out-of-body experience when you're asleep at night, but it's like it's more than a dream, it's like a real experience, or conscious visions while you're awake, your eyes open, sitting in a room, like Gary Renard, who had the two Ascended Masters teaching him, or in altered meditational states. All of these are equally as real as your physical encounters. So never ask yourself after you've had a dream with one of the Masters or God, if it wasn't real. Yes, it was real. Trust it. But also test the spirits, because sometimes there are masquerading spirits that will try to, imposter spirits. So, you have to keep your eyes open. So, some other things that happen, that sometimes books will drop off a shelf or fall on you when you're in a library or a bookstore or a metaphysical bookstore. I've had that happen to me several times. And the page of the book will be open or fall open, or you'll open it, and it'll be addressing the exact information you were seeking, or it will confirm something the Masters want to impress in your mind. I mean, get the sense that wherever you are, the Master's present, always. You know, you're never, never alone. Most of the coolest stuff that happens to you takes place in the 90% levels that you usually aren't consciously aware of. So you have to open and expand your awareness. You know, when it says expect a miracle? Yeah, expect a miracle encounter with the Lord any moment, or one of his agents. Another thing that happens is sometimes books that are not yet in print materialize. I told you about Jimmy Twyman, who was given a book that he was going to write in the future. It even had his name on it. But this was like years and years before he was going to start even writing books. So time again is an illusion. You know, everything that we think's happening now for the first time is already taking place on another level. I remember Paul Twitchell, the founder of Ekankar. Some years after he made his transition to the other side, he appeared as a night watchman and spoke at length to a man, and really helped this man during the time he was going through some difficulty. And later, he picks up a book at random, ho, 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 turns on the back to see the author, and here's a picture of the man that was posing as a night watchman. He said, for heaven's sakes, this is Paul Twitchell, and he died years ago. So death is an illusion. Nobody dies. Nobody goes anywhere. You know, we're all here. Everything is here. So another cool story is when Paul appeared to a woman who was standing in browsing in a bookstore, and handed her a copy of one of his books, which he had not yet written. And he said, "I think this will answer your questions." And so she bought the book, went on her way, liked it so much she wanted to buy another copy for her friend. But when she returned to purchase another copy, the bookstore owner said he had never, ever carried that book in his stock. And moreover, when he checked on the computer, there was no such book. So again, the encounters can be in any time frame of reference. They can apport you to another dimension of time. Jesus Christ appeared to me back in the early 70s, and I think I told you this already, took me into the Akashic Records. I stepped right into the life, his lifetime, in Palestine, which was appearing like a huge book, and he walked me through his whole incarnation, pointing out, you know, the lessons and the things of his lifetime in that time cell. So that was a very conscious experience for me. Now here I want to get into some stories. I'm going to refer to a British artist and esotericist by the name of Benjamin Krem. And he comes from the Alice Bailey tradition. And he was prepared to be a messenger to announce the coming of Lord Maitreya, the emergence of Lord Maitreya, and the materialization into the physical world of the masters of wisdom that work with Lord Maitreya. So according to Benjamin Krem, the Lord Maitreya entered our modern world from Shambhala in, I think it was 1977, and took up residence in London, in the Whitechapel area of East London, where he works quietly behind the scenes, appearing to people all over the world in a variety of guises, young, old, male, female, within a variety of staged but transforming scenarios. Now, personally, I have had, both when I was living in London in the year 2000, and before, from 1977, 78, when I first got involved with Benjamin Krem's information, I've had ongoing experiences with the master, I'm sure, with Lord Maitreya. I've had all kinds of wonderful adventures with Lord Maitreya. Now, many of them I think I've already shared in previous shows, so I'm not going to go through all of them. I just want to share with you a few that I have not shared with you yet, that I'm pretty sure I haven't. This is a really cool one. Unfortunately, I can't remember the year. I'm not very good in keeping linear time in my mind. Solario, my companion and co-commander, could tell you the very moment it occurred, but that's not my forte. Anyway, Solario and I were in Toronto, Canada, beautiful city on the Great Lakes, and we had just been visiting the Sai Baba Center and Library there. And we were higher than kites. We were so happy. We were in bliss, and we just thought, wow, it's been such a wonderful day. So we decided to go down to the park, which is right on the Great Lake, and we would just kind of find a rock and sit and do our japa mala, chant the name of the Lord, and kind of process the day, let it kind of sink in. And we did that. We walked around and were chanting our japa malas. We weren't really talking to each other. We were just in our own inner process. And we came back to our car. Our car was in a parking lot with those grass, little grass islands in front of the cars. They're called maidens. And as we approached our car, here we saw a Muslim man. Oh, we knew instantly it was Lord Maitreya. I mean, we just, you know, had enough experiences. We just knew instantly who it was. because it was so surreal. But because it, you know, it just becomes normal when you're here in experience, it doesn't seem phenomenal. So he's facing us on the maiden, a little bit to the right of our parked van. As soon as he saw us, and he appeared from nowhere because we didn't see him walking up to the maiden. We didn't see him at all. And he had on his white kurta and his white pants and his white knit cap on his hair. And long black, I think he had a beard, I don't remember. But anyway, he just looked like a Muslim man. And he took his prayer, the prayer mat that they use for their prayers 5 times a day. He took the mat and he spread it out facing us. And we came up to, you know, pretty close to him, you know, in front of where our car door was, but we didn't open the door because we were going to honor his space. And I did the, you know, Muslim greeting where you touch your heart and your forehead and your head. And I think I said Allah Malik, which means God is great in Arabic. And Solario did a similar gesture. I think she put her hands together in namaste, I'm not sure. But we both just stood there very respectfully. As he did his Allahu Akbar, you know, his whole prayers that you do 5 times a day if you're a good Muslim. And then, so surreal, he just took his mat up and vanished. I mean, that was it. He's vanished. And it just seemed so normal to us. We got in our van and we just said, wow, it was like my trail. Wow. We were like, you know, like you would be. But it seemed so normal. When these things happen to you, you just take it on board as if it were just the most natural thing in the world for that to have occurred. So that just imprinted my mind so much. I will go through several of the other ones I've had that I don't think I've shared. While I was living in London, I became very interested in the mythology of the Druids and the Knights Templar and all of the Celtic versions of the life of Jesus the Christ. And of course, he is supposed to have gone to, or at least his mother was supposed to have gone with Joseph of Arimathea. I mean, there's lots and lots and lots of stories, different stories. I won't get into them. They're probably all true as anything else, because Jesus is multidimensional, and it's very likely that he embodied all of those aspects and all of those expressions just to keep us interested and really confounded as to which is the right one. Well, they're all the right one. They're right for whoever is right. The Lord has that peculiar ability of being all things to all people. So pick your favorite legend and go with it. Anyway, I came out of my London apartment that day with my mind full of I wish I could remember the names. Caradwyn, I think, was one of the names. But I was speaking about Jesus when he was referred to in dragon symbology and as the serpent. Remember when Moses lifted up the brazen serpent when the tribes, the lost, so-called lost wandering tribes in Israel were being bitten by snakes? And the Lord said, lift up the serpent on this cross, and whoever gazes upon the serpent will not die, they'll be healed. That was like a precursor for the lifting up of Jesus on the cross. So in that context, in the Celtic understanding, and also in the Hindu, the Lord is often equated with the cobra or the serpent or the dragon, you know, the flying dragons. So they have also a very positive, very esoteric meaning, as well as the more negative spins. But outside, again, so surreal, outside my apartment, here was a man with a shirt that had some reference to Jesus as, you know, as the great serpent. And he had the serpent coming up. And I remember his, you know, he looked like an ordinary man, but he had these eyes, you know, these intense eyes. After a while, you get you realize those masters, you know, they always have these eyes that give them away. But he was holding this gorgeous Komodo dragon, you know, with the frills and the whole nine yards. It was so beautiful. You know, you just immediately wanted to touch it. And there was a tiny little boy there, which I later realized was, again, one of the masters in disguise, and probably the Master Jesus, because he often likes to take a form with Maitreya. He just likes to do that. And the man, I think, was probably Maitreya. And I asked the name of the dragon, and he gave the name that I was studying about in this Celtic lore, and he said, the name means light. Exactly what I was studying. And the little child had no fear. He immediately put forth his hand to pet the dragon, which shows a little child, you know, we have to enter the kingdom of heaven innocent, like a little child. And the mother, supposedly, and the father, you know, the masters that were playing those forms, were both very afraid. They wouldn't touch the dragon. So the whole thing was so symbolic and so beautiful. And anyway, that was another fun experience. I think I've told you about how I soul traveled to the feet of Maitreya when we were in East London in the Indian section. And I think I have told you about meeting the Muslim man who was doing his prayer beads on the bus on my way to the British Library. I think I told you that story. And we were both in bliss, and when I looked, you know, we were both chanting our japa malas, and I recognized that it was Maitreya. You know, because it just sends you into this blissful state. It's just incredible. And then one day I was going to the Alice Bailey group. I was going to participate in some of the esoteric circles, whatever they had there. I had so much fun in London because it's so rich in esoteric groups, you know, groups that are studying the Alice Bailey teachings and Blavatsky and stuff like that that I was at the time very interested in. And as I walked into the London Park, I saw this golden bronze statue in the park. And I walked up to it and looked at it closely, and the whole figure was golden bronzed, but it was very lifelike, and it looked exactly like Deepak Chopra. Same face. I looked at it all around, and the only thing that puzzled me, it was looked like a statue, there was no, you know, movement, no breathing, no animation, nothing. The only thing that was strange to me was that there was a pan for donations at his feet. And I didn't know what to make of that. So by this time, I noticed that quite a crowd had gathered around the statue, and everybody was kind of looking at it. And you couldn't quite tell, was it real or was it a statue? But it was so immobile and perfectly inanimate that he just finally realized it has to be a statue. No human being could stand like that. So we were all kind of getting closer and closer and looking at the statue, and before we could touch it or anything, the statue all of a sudden animated and turned and looked at a little child, about a 2-year-old child, a little girl who giggled in delight. She just giggled again. There was no fear. But the rest of us were so freaked out, including yours truly, that we leapt back about several feet, and then we just scattered. We just left. It just freaked us totally out. We couldn't wrap our head around it. And I retreated to a coffee shop to have a cup of tea or whatever to process it. And then I realized, oh, my gosh, that was Maitreya. You know, because nobody can do that. Nobody can suspend, you know, complete animation, even their eyes, everything, and appear like a statue. So that was another interesting encounter. ubiquitous, I would have to say, Lord Maitreya. There was another time I was going. I was again seeking Maitreya, and I was going to go to East London to the Whitechapel Mosque. I was dressed like a Muslim. I think I told you the story. And I was riding the underground subway. I was in the subway station, and I wasn't too sure which exit to get off for the Whitechapel Mosque. So I went into an information little kiosk center that sold magazines and stuff. And when I came out, I noticed there was an Indian Sikh standing there. And he was a spitting image of Lord Maitreya. Well, Lord Maitreya is extremely handsome, with a black beard. And usually he dresses like a Muslim, but sometimes he dresses like a Hindu also. When I, soul traveled to his feet, physically apported myself or transported myself to his presence, I think I told you, I'm sure I told you that story, he was in Indian clothing. So here he is, like a well-dressed modern Sikh with a turban and a beard and everything, but he also had a business suit on, as many Sikhs do in India. Very, very handsome. And I knew it was Lord Maitreya. So I got very, very close to him and wanted to get his attention, but he's reading some book. I didn't see what the book was. I think it was a direction book, on how to find your way around in the tube, the underground, which would make sense in the context. But no matter what I did to get his attention, he wouldn't look up, which is unusual, any human being. And, I was a pretty good-looking girl in those days, so, he would look. Yeah, I'm sure he would look. So I went back and forth and back and forth and did all sorts of shenanigans, but he never, never looked. And so I figured he was Maitreya. Well, again, I was filled with joy and mirth and laughter and just those wonderful feelings that you have when you know you're on the trail and the Lord is really aware of the trail that you're on. And, of course, I have told you of many, many encounters I've had with Sai Baba, and I've told you about how we met John Roger and 20 years before I met him in the physical. And the agents that led me to meeting John Roger. I told you how I met my first Ashtar command teacher. But I don't think I've ever told you about my Ashtar encounters. some things are just a little too precious. I don't talk about them a great deal because they're just a little bit too precious. But I want to tell you some of the experiences I had with Ashtar after I came back in future from Ashtar and integrated into a soul aspect, which is the body I occupy now. And there were many, many little occurrences that happened to affirm to me, who I was and what I was here to do. And that's something that when you have these integrations of higher consciousness, you're always guided and taken care of so that, you feel like you're going crazy when the reality is so different from the reality that most people live in. So you need those affirming confirmations, let's say. So I told you about how I was beamed from my car aboard ship and instructed in my mission and what I was to say in my messages. I've already told you that. And I've already told you how I was beamed up and spent 2 weeks aboard ship with Ashtar when I was in Athens, Greece. I told you that story. So what I haven't told you is that one day, and this would be called a soul travel experience because I was fully awake. I was probably in meditation. I don't think I was asleep. Pretty sure I was in meditation. But I consciously had a soul travel experience of where Ashtar beamed me up out of a chair in a room through the wall, floated me down this highway to where I came under a large spaceship. And there I saw Ashtar He was dressed like a regular Earth person. He didn't have his commander's outfit on. He embraced me. I can even remember the smell. You know how everyone has their own smell, their own scent? I can remember his scent. And he took me aboard ship and took me into a room where I interviewed a whole group of souls that were going to come to Earth as walk-ins. And he wanted me to share with them the process of what it is to be a walk-in and to basically interview them and give them a briefing of what that would be like for them to see if they wanted to do it. And that was just as real as any experience I've ever had in the physical. Another time, I was aboard ship with Ashtar, and before I came back into my body, again, this is an out-of-body soul experience. He didn't beam me up in this one. I was just on the ship. We turned, we faced each other, and we merged into one star, which it looked like a star, but probably it was the Merkaba that we share as twin souls, twin flames. I suspect that all twin flames have a combined Merkaba that they merge into. So if any of you have had that experience, that's probably what is taking place. It's the merging into the unified field that you share with your Bayoun affinity or your mate. I have several times had the experience, well, when I first came into the body, which was in November 22nd, 1992, I think, 1991. Our particular song is Unchained Melody. So Solario and I were writing, actually we were touring, doing workshops back east, somewhere in New York. And we stopped to have something to eat. It was a little Italian restaurant, and there were just a few booths. And there was only one other couple in the restaurant, which came in after we did. They did not play the jukebox, which was there at the table. Nobody played the jukebox. I didn't play it. They didn't play it. And six times in succession, the song Unchained Melody played. And that was a prelude to a very intense encounter out of body with Ashtar that was so incredible that I just really don't feel that I should share it. It's very, let's say it was very romantic, very, it was one in which I was gone from the body for 3 hours. Normally, when Solario stops for gas or coffee or whatever, I would immediately wake up. But she said I was completely gone. I wasn't breathing. I wasn't moving. She was a little worried that I had left for good. But she knew better than to disturb me. But she said for 3 hours, I was completely gone. And I was, of course, with Ashtar aboard the ship, getting oriented to this whole rather rash movement of mine coming into this dimension. It actually was kind of a rush, on the spur of the moment decision on my part. So thereafter, so often when we go into a mall or a restaurant, we would hear Unchained Melody suddenly come on the jukebox or the music, whatever. And the other thing was that the rune, the X rune, which means divine union and oneness and partnership, would appear everywhere in the sky and in shadow formation and in things that would appear. And very often a rune would appear. You know, if we go into a motel to spend the night or something, there would be a rune on the floor in front of our bed. So there were a lot of these little affirming signs that would take place in those years when I was getting my bearings and trying to integrate into this physical dimension. So I wanted to share a few of these with you tonight so that you would be encouraged to start to keep notes and keep aware of your own miraculous encounters. your own romance with your twin flames, your own, just the fun things that are happening as these dimensional merges take more and more precedent in our life, and the physical and the astral realm will become one. So, we will just see everybody. You know, the ones that we thought were dead will suddenly be there walking, and we'll have that complete exchange with one dimension and another that before was invisible to us. So keep your big eyes open, and watch, you know, just watch. And also think back and see if you can recall when you've had a divine encounter with one of the masters or angels or Ashtar or somebody. So let's take a deep breath, and we integrate again. We just expand our awareness and embrace of this teaching tonight and prepare the place so that you too can have more of these divine encounters. And we'll go out chanting, Anayu. 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 Anayu